thanks in part to a two-year sequestration reprieve DOD got from the Ryan-Murray budget agreement. The Defense Department says things are definitely better than they were in 2013, when the automatic budget cuts took $30 billion out of the budget midway through the fiscal year, grounding a third of the Air Force's combat fleet, canceling Navy deployments, and leaving the Army with only two fully trained brigade combat teams. Deputy Defense Secretary Robert Work says the two-year budget agreement, which expires this year, has allowed DOD to start putting more money into training, but the department is still digging out of a readiness trough the 2013 cuts created, and the trough will get deeper if sequestration gets back on track in 2016.
It is no exaggeration to say we are constantly being accused of crying wolf. We're still recovering from the incomprehensibly destructive way that sequestration was implemented. There is no strategic planner on the planet who can really plan in that type of environment.
Work told the Center for Strategic and International Studies that the military's readiness problems are still serious, partially because of the cuts and partially because a smaller force has been charged with performing more missions. For example, before the start of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the Air Force had a fleet of 88 combat fighter squadrons, compared to 54 now.
So because of the unrelenting pace on this smaller force, operations over the past 13 years have just started to compound. So all of the high-end training events, such as our red flags or getting ready for suppression of enemy air defenses, they've been cut back. The result is our fighter and bomber squadrons have suffered skill atrophy on these higher-end missions. Deployments has also knocked out their career maintenance progression. This is a real problem. It's not seen. It's kind of the hidden disease. It creates an Air Force-wide shortage of highly skilled maintainers, and that impacts the availability of aircraft and also on less flight training.
The Navy faces a similar issue, a smaller fleet that's being asked to do more, not less. That means the service is able to keep up with the demands of current operations, but there's very little slack in the system if it had to suddenly deploy additional ships to a contingency.
They were putting out 105 ships on deployments around the world when they had a 400-ship fleet. They're putting out 105 ships right now with 287. Do the math. Ship maintenance is having a big problem keeping up. A smaller battle fleet, coupled with unrelenting deployments to meet global demands, are taking a serious toll. The material conditions of our carriers right now are not good. Generally, a carrier will go into an 11-month standard dry dock maintenance period. It's now taking about 16 months to get those carriers out because we've been using them so hard. There are currently six carriers in some sorts of maintenance, more than half of our total carrier force, and nine amphibious ships, which is one-third of the amphibious force. Our ready forces that are out, we're able to keep them up, but the forces that would respond in a contingency are just not there. Now, the Sea Service also face a very severe strike fighter shortfall. This is a combination of the slip of the F-35 and we're flying the wings off of our older airplanes. So they're wearing out faster than we expected, and we're not getting the F-35 as fast as we wanted. So right now, it's really a problem. We have an awful lot of airplanes that are just waiting to get in depot and we can't get them through fast enough.
Work says the Army has done a remarkable job of building back its readiness from the serious dip its formation suffered during 2013. In essence, that service has stopped the decline in readiness, but it's still struggling to move its soldiers through the full-spectrum training exercises that it believes are necessary.
But it's simply not possible to buy a seasoned infantry platoon sergeant, a tank platoon leader, or an aviation company commander off the shelf. The Army has to make them. That takes time. You'll hear time over and over again. We're in a time problem as much as we are in a resource problem now because of the hole we're in. Before 2001, officers, NCOs, and soldiers who'd been in the Army for 10 years would have completed numerous full-spectrum combat training center rotations prior to assuming key leadership roles. The junior company and field grade leaders of today, in many cases, have only experienced a single decisive action training rotation. Some, none. They've been focused on counterinsurgency operations, as they should be. The Army's goal is to have sufficient full-spectrum ready forces by FY 2020, again, assuming present budget level and not BCA level. A return to BCA funding would push that readiness goal out 3 to 5 years. So I'm talking about us recovering under the best of circumstances, the president's budget level, in the early 20s. This should be a big concern.
Work says DoD leaders are consigned to the notion that they are going to be living with lower top-line budgets than they'd like. But he says many of the military's current problems stem not just from budget cuts, but from budget instability. The federal government has operated under continuing resolutions for significant periods of time during each of the past 5 years, and then sequestration hit, and then there was a government shutdown that furloughed 800,000 employees. And once again, for the fiscal year that started 6 weeks ago, Congress still has not passed a DoD appropriations bill or authorization bill.
So stop the madness, okay? We have to really stop the madness. I'm extremely and supremely proud of the professionals in the Department of Defense who continue to press on despite this unprecedented uncertainty and disruption to their missions, their programs, and their lives. Yes, their lives. That government shutdown really, really was a kick in the teeth to the 800,000 civilians in the Department of Defense. So make no mistake here. Constructing a coherent defense budget in this type of budget uncertainty is beyond the capability of the most capable of men and women.
Work also lamented the fact that Congress appears to be unwilling to go along with DoD's proposals to save money in certain areas of its budget so that it can fund readiness and modernization. By the department's math, the total tally of budget-saving measures the Pentagon has proposed and Congress has rejected is $70 billion.
For example, the Air Force wants to retire the A-10. It's a great plane. It's ugly as hell, but it is a beautiful plane to anybody who sees it on the battlefield. It was designed for a single mission, and that was close air support. If the Air Force plan to divest the A-10 is delayed, it will cause serious maintenance challenges. Because we have to assume, we have to hedge our bets and assume that sequestration must occur. That's what I do not believe that the committees understand. We're hedging our bets. And under sequestration levels, you don't have enough maintainers to maintain both the F-35 and the A-10. It's pretty simple. So those personnel would be stretched, and we really need to make that move.
Congressional committees have agreed to impose a pay freeze on the salaries of generals and admirals, but other than that, they've turned back most of DoD's personnel spending reforms until a special compensation committee delivers its final recommendations early next year. They've also been unwilling to go along with another round of base closures, which the Pentagon wants to institute in order to reduce an estimated 24% excess real estate inventory. DoD believes another BRAC round would save it $2 billion per year.
Now imagine the largest private sector companies being forced to maintain 24% of excess overhead. They'd be out of business in a heartbeat. Their shareholders simply would not stand for it. How could they possibly maintain their competitive edge if forced to do so? So in this time of constrained resources, I just don't understand why we are hamstringing ourselves. Well, I understand it, because it's a hard thing to do. Nobody wants to lose a base in their district. But maintaining that extra capacity is a big problem for us because it is wasteful spending, period. It is the worst type of bloat.
Work says DoD leaders are determined to make sure the military services don't return to the low readiness levels of the 1970s that analysts now reflect on as a hollow force. But to pull that off under today's budget numbers will require less spending on new weapons programs. Realizing that it won't be able to modernize as quickly as it would like to, even under the rosiest of possible budget scenarios, DoD will release a new strategy later this week to make sure it has at least the designs for new systems on the shelf, even if it can't afford to build them right now.
We're underinvesting in new weapons. We simply are, given the investments of our closest competitors. Everybody knows this. Everybody sees it. Everybody laments it. I'm waiting for Congress to say, yeah, let's get at it. We really need to get at this and work with the department. So what are we doing inside the department to manage this turbulence? Well, first, we're looking at innovation across the department. Later this week, Secretary Hagel is going to announce a defense-wide innovation initiative. Part of that is going to be a long-range research and development planning program, just like we had in 1975. Back then, we said if we go after stealth, guided munitions, and information technology, we blend them together, we utilize the strengths of the American Armed Forces, we will have an offset strategy that will allow us to rule the battlefield conventionally for the foreseeable future. And we were right.
Work did not offer any detailed descriptions of DOD's new innovation initiative, but he made it clear that it would be tougher to pull off if the department returns to sequestration next year. Research and development has already borne a disproportionate share of the budget cuts of the last 2 years, and a return to sequestration would cut R&D by another $23 billion. In Washington, Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.